Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On the 6th of January, over 250 million Indonesians held their breath when their national football team walked onto the pitch for the semi-final of the AFF Championship in a game between Indonesia and Vietnam. This was a massive game for Indonesia. The players lined up for the national anthem. 10 of them were born and raised in Indonesia. However, one stood out, a player from Europe who somehow became an adored international player for Indonesia. This is the story of the man who is often called the David Beckham of Southeast Asia. Mark Klok was born and raised in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. He played as a midfielder in Bulgaria and Scotland before making a surprise move to the Indonesian League back in 2017. When Klok arrived in Indonesia, he thrived both on and off the pitch. He managed to become an Indonesian international player, even though he had no Indonesian roots whatsoever. He's also captained their national football team several times over the last 12 months. So, we scheduled a call with Mark Klok for a podcast to find out how he became the David Beckham of Southeast Asia. Welcome to the 433 Podcast.
Yo, Sam.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, good, man. How was your day today so far?
Good. To be honest, I'm a bit sick today. But I trained the rest of the day just with the family home and the little one.
Yeah.
Nothing much. You?
Yeah, all good, man. All good. Yeah, a little bit of a fever or something else?
Yeah, fever, yeah. I think.
Yeah, after the AFF Championship, man, I followed you guys. It was you guys came far to the semifinals, came a long way. How do you look back at the tournament now?
Good question, man. Proud, but also disappointed because I wanted to win it so bad, and I think we had such a great chance to win it. But unfortunately, we went down in the semi-final. And I just felt there was so much more for us to take, you know. I literally thought that we had the best team in the tournament. But sometimes, not always, the best team wins. But I don't know. I feel proud because the way we played, the way I played, the way... how far we came, you know, also to show Indonesia in front of our whole fans that we are not afraid against any other country, Thailand, Vietnam. We played really great home games in front of 60, 70,000 supporters. So this is such a nice moment to look back on. But disappointed, yeah, what I said, because we didn't win it, didn't go to the final. Yesterday I was watching Vietnam-Thailand, the final, and I just painted my eyes like, shit, man, we should have been there, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so close, so close. But you can see, I think, that there's a lot of improvement in the Indonesian national team over the last couple of years, right? And there's progress that's being made. And I think, above all, that may be the most important, even though, of course, for you as a player now, it may feel like there was something lost. Yeah, you did everything. As always, you are a very hard worker and a fanatic in the field as well. I have to ask about this because this clip went viral. You probably know what I'm going to ask about. The clip went viral that you were covering one of the players from Vietnam, and then you all of a sudden you fell to the ground. And it looked, Mark, it looked like you were diving. What happened there?
Did you not see the sniper in the stadium? Call of Duty live. No, man, I will tell you the story about it. We played them in home.
Yeah.
Okay. And this number five left back, this guy was tackling 2 feet up, making crazy tackles, giving elbows, and every time he did, like, he was the one who got damaged, but he was actually killing our players. And so everybody was speaking about him, like, what is this guy doing? How does he get away with it? You know, not having a red card or whatever.
Yeah.
And we go there to Vietnam. The guy do the same thing in the first half, still only gets yellow. And we was behind 1-0 at that point, 2-0. And the coach said in halftime, like, Mark, do anything you can to get this guy off the pitch. So, you know, we have a chance to, you know, to 10 men, and maybe we can go back because it's our last game.
Yeah.
And I was trying to irritate the guy, and he was smart, actually. I must say he was smart. He was winning 2-0, so he didn't have to do all these things again. I was like, what? How can I get this guy on the pitch? And I was like, oh man, okay, maybe I do, like, he give me an elbow or something. But sadly enough, there are cameras, and sadly enough, the guy have his hands behind his back. So but you know, all publicity is good publicity, they say, right? So at least it went viral. But I felt a little bit ashamed when I saw it because it's not me. But I just go all in, you know, all in or nothing to go and reach the final.
Yeah, yeah, it's good that you can laugh about it now. Yeah, because of course it is funny, and these things do happen sometimes on the pitch. I can imagine that when you're so deep invested into a tournament and you, like, all rationality goes overboard and you just do anything to win, and this backfired a bit, but it's still funny. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But you guys didn't post that for 2-3, luckily.
I don't think so. Yeah, yeah.
Don't already ashamed enough, man.
Yeah, I think I saw it somewhere on Twitter. All right, man, let's talk about your career. We talked a little bit about the recent AFF Championship, but overall, you, of course, have a very interesting and unique career. And let's pick it up at the moment you first moved to Indonesia, and a little bit before that, because at that moment you were playing in Scotland at Dundee FC, and before that you played in Scotland before. I think you played in Bulgaria as well, and in the Netherlands, of course, where you're from. When you were playing at Dundee FC, and you look back at that period of your career before you moved to Indonesia, what was your career then like, and what kind of struggles did you have to encounter as a football player?
Yeah, good question. I was start back in the days, and as a kid, you know, every boy dreams of having a career at United, Real Madrid, Premier League, whatever, Eredivisie. And me as well. I played in the youth at Utrecht, FC Utrecht, 10 years. Always dreamt of making my debut in the Eredivisie. Didn't happen. Had a chance to go abroad to Scotland to the Premier League at the age of 19, which was the best thing I could ever done as a human, as an individual, to grow myself. As a football player, that's the moment, you know, everything starts to get serious, and you start to see the real world of football, where you say, okay, it's something I like, it's something I love, but it's also my job now, and there's money to be earned. And it's a way of living, and you see that everything is going to be surviving from this day. And you are a young guy in another country abroad. You have to do everything yourself, and you have to make a statement for yourself that you are the one who should play. And this is not always the case, and easy to play week in, week out. And this is where the challenge really start, because as a kid, talent, good player, you always play every week, right? And you enjoy what you do. But that's the moment when sometimes you don't play anymore, and you're not in the squad, and you're not on the bench, and for weeks, for months, you not even play a game. And that's where the challenge starts, and the mental aspect starts to enter. And I will say that my career was really challenging mental wise, because I always had to fight against the odds and prove myself over and over again, like, hey, what you guys are doing is not right. I should play. I'm better. I think I'm better, et cetera, et cetera. So that time in Dundee, actually, it was a funny one, because I already played in Scotland before. It didn't work out. And I left to Bulgaria, where I had an amazing time again, where I find the joy of football back. Then I went to England and back to Scotland again, as I thought, okay, now is the time. I learned so much. I grow as a player. Now I'm not that young kid from 19 anymore. I'm 23 with a lot of baggage. Now is the time to play and maybe make my move again to Rangers, Celtic, and maybe go back to the Premier League again. This was still the dream, you know. This was still the focus and where I worked for. Then I signed on deadline day at Dundee, and you will say, why will you sign a guy on deadline day and not play him? So I come on trial 3 days, and then the last day of the window, we say, yeah, I need you. We don't have this position in our team. Please sign. Okay, let's go. I arrive and I don't play nothing, like zero, and I'm like, oh no, not again, you know. And then there is this one day where I just receive an email which says, "Hey Mark, I'm Frank. I got your number from this and this. Do you want to go to Indonesia?" Mm. And I'm like, "Hey, what is this?" Does he mean I have to go on holiday, or do they actually play football there, you know? So this was the moment where everything changed, 2017.
Yeah, that's crazy. So you got that email, and your first thoughts were like, you know, do they even play football there and stuff? And from that moment on, I imagine you Googled the club and stuff. What was your process then to come to this decision, if this was a good decision, to move away from your European dream, so to speak, to Southeast Asia?
Yeah, first of all, you have to let the reality check in, because what you say, the European dream, this is what we all have, right? Every player in the Netherlands, in the UK or whatever, who's listening, has this dream of becoming that great European player, because this is all we fought for as a kid and what we did throughout the academies. But that moment you realize, like, hey, is maybe my European dream not realistic anymore? Like, is this it? Like, should I try something else? And at that moment I said, maybe I have to accept it, you know, let it sink in. Maybe it's not going to work out. But what is the alternative? And then I was thinking, like, maybe I can have a career in Southeast Asia or in Asia, where I am that guy with, multiple possibilities. People look up to you. You are a great player, great lifestyle, which you always dreamed of in Europe. Yeah. And at that moment when the opportunity came, I was like, maybe I can start from zero all over again, where nobody know me, and do the same thing again and let it work there.
Yeah.
So that was actually the thought of me when the opportunity arrived.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Cool. So that's interesting. So then you decide, right? You decide to make the move, and that's a big decision. Then you hop on a plane and you fly all the way to Indonesia, and you arrive at the PSM Makassar. Not a lot of people in general, especially from Europe, have ever visited that the place, you know. So what was that like when you got off the plane and you first, you know, saw the environment and the people? What was that experience like?
Weird, man, because when I arrived, they thought a superstar is coming, you know, and grabbed me in pictures and signatures, and I was like, what is happening? You know, like in Scotland, I say good morning, gaffer, and the guy just walked past me, you know, didn't even say hello, and people on the street would never know who am I, and I arrived and it was just madness, and I was like, wow, okay, welcome. new life. Okay, I can like this, I think.
Yeah, a lot of appreciation immediately, something that maybe was lacking a bit before. I also read in an interview, another news outlet, a colleague of mine, Bastuit, I think, did with your mother, that there were some personal things happening right when you arrived in Indonesia, that your stepfather passed away the day after you arrived in Indonesia. You know, what was it like from your perspective, if I may ask, if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay as well. But I want to ask, you know, what was it like from your perspective, and how did you deal with something like that?
Yeah. So first of all, you take the challenge to go to the other side of the world all alone. No family, no girlfriend, nobody. Then second of all, you are actually on a journey to find acceptance. And what you said, I didn't have this acceptance in Europe. So all I was looking for and wanted was this acceptance. So you come in a new country, take the step and the risk to find this. And then the day after this happened, when I arrived, and I was in complete shock, especially for my mother, because, yeah, this is crazy, you know, like this was just shocking. Like, I don't even know how to describe, but just, I felt so sad for my mom that I just wanted to come back again for her. But if you look back, and even at that time, that was not the right decision, because what I said, I was on the journey to find acceptance. And if I go back, I may never find that. So my mom even told me, stay there, and when everything is calmed down, so far it can be calmed down, I will come to you, and we will be together. So that was the decision we made, and I always knew, okay, I knew I came here with a one-way ticket to survive and to make things happen. But at that moment, I knew maybe more clear, okay, whatever happens, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make my mom proud, my dad proud. I have to do it for them as well.
Yeah. So it's you took it as extra motivation, right?
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best way to deal with something like that at that moment. And then you submerge yourself in Indonesian culture, right? And Indonesia or Southeast Asia, the culture can be very different from what we're used to in Western Europe, especially. My mother's family is from Indonesia as well. I visited a couple of times, and the culture is very different in the sense that people may be more grateful for what they have, a bit more humble as well, I think. From your point of view, when you submerged yourself in the culture for the first time, what were the things that caught your attention?
Yeah, I think the thing is that people may not have a lot. And if I talk about a lot, I mean maybe materialistic things, health-wise, just principle and normal things, what we count as granted in Europe. But they are so happy and grounded and grateful for what they have that I find it fascinating that we always, in our European mindset, want more and better and greater. And at the first time, I realized, like, you know, they are fine, you know, And the other thing is they don't know better. So they don't know the other side maybe. But for them, it's okay. Mm. Like, they're good. And, you know, I can learn from that, and still I can. And at that time especially, I was like, it opened my eyes, because you never saw something like that, because in the European mindset, it's always go, 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 go. Chase. And it made me sometimes realize that here I should also just say, okay, you know, we are here now. Look what we have. Look how grateful I am. Okay, there's more to take, or there's more to earn, or there's, you know, greater things to achieve, but look what we already have. And I think that is the biggest thing I learned from the mindset of Indonesian people.
Cool, interesting. So then you start your football career as well in Indonesia. And Indonesia, a lot of people don't know worldwide that after China and India and the US, it's the biggest country when it comes to population in the world. And of course, it's a massive country consisting out of thousands and thousands of islands. So that means that when you travel with your team, you also have to visit a lot of different places, right? Can you describe some of the away days and some of the, especially the more special experiences you've had, the places you visited that you thought, wow, I never thought ever that I would play in a place like this, for example?
Yeah, there are so many. Like what you said, the country is so big, and every game you need to fly if you don't play at home, because so many different cities. Sometimes you have a travel of, let's say, 12 to 14 hours. I could be back in Amsterdam, you know, but I'm still in Indonesia playing an away game. It's crazy. And I never forget my first time I arrived. We played the first game was away, then home, and then away again. And they told me, welcome, because you just arrived to the two most difficult away games you can have in Indonesia. So after this, don't worry, everything gets better. But just survive these two. So the first one, we go on a plane. I think it was a two-hour trip, and then we go by bus like 6 or 7 hours, and then we arrive in a such a bad place, like super crazy. Like the hotel was so bad, the food was horrible, like nothing on the street. I felt like I was in a jungle, like in the middle of nowhere. I had to play the game. Then after the game, go back again in the bus, so long to the airport, go home. And I was just like, wow, where did I end up? Then we have a home game, and then we go away again. And this was the most horrible one for the people. Yeah. So I said, okay, let's take it as a surprise. So I think we have three flights to go to one place. And when we arrive in that place, I don't have any internet. I don't have any signal. I see people on the street with like fully naked, with only the
very indigenous clothing, so to speak.
They put something in front of their penis.
Yes, tribes.
What is it called? Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I was like, wow, man, like I'm in the jungle, like real jungle. And the place was called Papua. Ah. So I think everybody in life have heard Papua New Guinea and everything. Yes. And actually, I was there. Like, I was in Papua at that point just to play a game.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Wow.
And there was no TV because the game couldn't be covered as well. So they told me, like, if the result is not good, maybe they will just shoot with a gun in the air to make the referee afraid, you know? Like, it was just crazy. And they said, never there is a team who win there. And actually, we won that day.
Oh, wow.
And everybody was looking like, should we celebrate or should we just...
get out.
get out. Oh, wow. So I will say, I think that was some nice away games,
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And also, you were appreciated the moment you arrived, but also on the pitch, I think people sensed immediately that you added value to the team. And you made the move to Persija Jakarta, one of the biggest teams of Indonesia. What was it like for you to then play in Jakarta for one of the bigger teams?
Yeah, so I was 3 years playing at Makassar. So when I arrived, I signed a one-year deal. After the season, I immediately extended for 2 years. They were really happy. After the second year, with 1 year left, they were so happy again that they say, let's sign a five-year contract and help you with the documents to get your passport. So I signed a five-year contract as, I think, one of the first ever players in Indonesia as a foreigner with such a long contract. But then after 1 year, they start to have financial problems. And at that moment, also the results start to drop a little bit because of the problems, I think, as well. And luckily for me, there was Persija who knocked on the door and said, hey, we know he still has a long contract, but we want to buy him. So this was quite a big thing. So I was stoked because after 3 years in Makassar, I finally moved to a big city again, which also makes it easier for flying, traveling, family, more international city. So I was really happy with that move. So this was 2020, early 2020 it happened.
COVID shortly after that, right?
And then crazy. And then 2 games in and COVID came.
Oh. So you barely got to experience the fans as well.
In 2 games, yeah.
Yeah.
So not much.
Yeah. Yeah, so then COVID hits and I think the league was shut down in Indonesia as well, right? Like most of football worldwide.
Yeah, for 1 year.
Yeah, for a full year even. That's crazy.
Yeah. 4 years, 12 months.
Yeah. So how many games did you actually play for Persija?
So I played 2 for the league. Then the league got stopped 12 months. Then we came back for a tournament.
Yeah.
And then I played the whole tournament, like 8 games. Mm. And then after the tournament, I made the move.
Yes, that's a delicate move. We're talking about you move to Persib, your current club, and that's like you move from Real Madrid to Barcelona or something similar, right?
Yeah,
that's a very delicate move. Yeah, I saw on YouTube you did a big interview with a journalist back then on why you made the move. But could you briefly explain why did you decide to leave Persija Jakarta and move to Persib Bandung, one of the other big clubs from Indonesia?
Yeah. So it was a dream actually to play for Persija and to make this move. I was really happy to live in Jakarta and sign a big long contract there. But then unfortunately COVID came and what I said, the league got stopped down. problems start to happen with the clubs financial wise. And that was the biggest reason for me to say, okay, yes, we have COVID. In the whole world, we have COVID. Every football club experienced this. But how are we going to deal with the situation? And they were really stubborn at the time. It was only one way. And I'm a person and player. Like, I always come up for my rights. And I think every player should do this. But it's not always the case, especially in Indonesia with local players. They feel afraid or they get pressed. But at that time I was really strong in what I want and what I don't want. And it was really sad that they didn't find any way. I was speaking with them so many times, and then I find, okay, if it's not going here in the way I want it to go, and I'm in my rights by FIFA and by all rights, then I should maybe look for a way out. And it was crazy because we played a tournament, what I said, and that tournament we won, and I got best player of the tournament. So I thought maybe after this tournament, they will still want to talk with me and find a way. And even after that, they didn't want to find any compromise and nothing. Yeah. So I just thought, okay, then this is it. We won the final of the cup against Persib. It's my team, the biggest game in Indonesia. Yeah. And after the game, the coach of Persib called me and said, hey, congratulations, how's it going? I said, everything great, only I have problems here financially, and we have a bit of argument. He said, whatever you want, you are welcome here, so you know. I said, well, maybe we can make something happen here, you know. So, I actually broke the contract by rights, and I make, I think, one of the biggest, craziest transfers in Indonesian football history.
So, but to break a contract, this may be delicate, but that means that the salary hasn't been paid out for a longer period of time. Is that correct then?
Yeah. So what actually they did in Indonesia at that time was they find a rule. I don't know how I say this and if I should say it, but let's say that let's do it like this. The salary didn't get paid on time by a number of days delayed, months, where you have the right as a player. If after 14 days after notice, you are a free player. Yes. So actually I use this rights. I use this way. And after this, I was a free agent to go wherever I want to go.
Yeah, so you make this move, like you said, it's a historic move almost, like, and because the rivalry between these two clubs, like people outside Indonesia may not know, but this is very intense. Like, people have literally died over the years because of confrontations between the supporters, fan bases. So when you make the move from one of these clubs to another, I can imagine that you get the full brunt of that too. Like, there are a lot of fans, especially from Persija in that regard, of course, who are probably not very happy with that move. So what was it like from your perspective to deal with the fans?
I should make a documentary about it, like Luis Figo. No, I remember it went in parts, okay? So first one was the announcement, like, hey, guys, I'm leaving the club. So at that moment, everyone was sad, okay? Like, everyone was on my side. Everybody was like, what is happening? How can this guy leave our club? Just got the passport, just been Indonesian, just won the player of the tournament, won the cup. How can he go from our club, you know? Yeah. So the first step was the announcement, I'm leaving. The second part was the club reacted on the announcement, I'm leaving, and fans start to a little bit turn on me, like, they start to believe the club. Then the third one was, I'm announcing my new club. And I mean, every other club would have maybe been okay, but this one was like a no-go. Like, no chance he will do that. Like, nobody will believe this will happen. And then just one day, the announcement came. And like, whole Indonesia was shocked. And I remember like my inbox of DM with death threats and so many messages and newspapers, and like, was just crazy. And I remember like, yeah, it's just part of it, you know, like, I don't even open it. It's just the choice I made and I have to stand behind it. And I did one interview at that time because I felt like I have to give my story once. I don't want to reply to nobody every time and tell the same story all the time. I just want to do it once so people leave me alone, you know. Let me live my life. Let me play my football, because the thing I did was actually really normal. And after a time, it settled down.
So, but did
and
you...
actually also because of the national team, because I started playing for the national team and we did well. So actually the supporters of Persija had to support me again because I played for the country.
That's a good point. So that's interesting. You already mentioned it. You got your passport around the same time. So that's a very interesting and unique part of your career, is that after playing in Indonesia for several years, you have no Indonesian blood or heritage whatsoever, but you became eligible because you lived in Indonesia for a long period of time to receive an Indonesian passport and to become an international player for Indonesia. So when did the FA approach you for this, and what was the process in your mind like to decide, like, I'm going to give up my Dutch passport to get an Indonesian passport and do this?
Yeah, so the first time was actually already in Makassar, and it was not because of the FA, but more of the supporters. So I think it was more like a joke, or like, hey, will you be interested to play for us? Like, we need a player like you. And at that time, I said in the interview, they asked me this question, and I said, yeah, why not? Like, I'm here, it will be amazing. I've seen videos and footage of the national team. To play in a country of 300 million people would be a dream coming true. And at that moment, the ball started rolling. The club started to support me. The federation started to support me. The coach at that time from the national team started to reach out and say, hey, are you really interested? And okay, how can we do this? So at that moment, like, everything was in my advantage, that people really supported me and say, okay, let naturalize him, because he is a great asset for the country to play for us. So that was the reason why it happened. And also, it wasn't really a hard decision for me, to be honest. It was just like, why not? You know, like, such a honor and a great key turn point in my career, you know, and life.
Yeah, it's a wild move, but it's very, it's beautiful in a way that you became so... you fell in love with this country, and then the country fell in love with you. And then now that's unified in you playing for the national team. I think you made your debut in the summer of 2022 in a friendly against Bangladesh, if I'm not mistaken. What was that moment like for you to then step onto the pitch wearing the Indonesia jersey, the national anthem playing? What was it like for you?
Yeah, especially the anthem at the start. I was like, wow, you know, is this really happening? Like, I don't even know the Wilhelmus, you know, like, now I'm singing the national anthem of Indonesia out of full chest. just seeing the supporters there chanting my name was even crazy, because at that game was my first game, and halftime the captain go out and coach and he say, okay, to who should I give it? And the coach said, yeah, give it to Mark. And I was like, wow, it's my first game for national team of Indonesia. I'm wearing captaincy. Like, can things go crazy, you know, like, how my life changed. But I felt proud, you know, and so happy. And what I said, everything started with a journey of acceptance, and I really felt the acceptance came to light, and I think this is what purified me as a person, as a player, and what made me calm and grateful to live every day.
Yes, to live every day. That's a segue to an unfortunate thing that happened last year in Indonesian football culture. We mentioned before that sometimes, because the fans are so fanatic, incidents can happen. But last year, a big thing happened. I think recently a policeman got sentenced for that as well. Like, the big stadium disaster with, I think, over 170 people who passed away. Was not at your club, not a game you were playing, but still, it's in Indonesia, and with a very, very big impact. It was worldwide news, of course. What was it like from your perspective, and how do you look at the fact that this happened in the country you are playing and you're a national player for now?
First of all, really, really, really sad, especially for all the people involved, you know, and the families, like, crazy. I could not imagine it'd be happening in my game, you know, for the players, for the families. But the crazy thing is, and I say this also at that time, like, I was shocked, okay? But I was the... So I have to really say this carefully because maybe you interpret me wrongly, but when this happened, I was like, oh, another tragedy. You know, like, here we go again. Like, why every time this happens here? Then I see the number of deaths start to go up like crazy. And I was like, is this real? You know, like, is this really 160, 170 people? But then I see all the news in all over the world start to take this on and publish it. And I was like, yeah, this is big. But then it actually started to sink in that this is not normal, man. Like, this should stop. And so the real shock came after. Later, I started to digest it. And I say, this is madness. It could have been me, you know, like, I could have been playing there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I think now the FIFA and Indonesian FA are working together to improve the stadiums and stuff. What's the situation like now? What do you know about ways people are looking to prevent this from ever happening?
Difficult question, because to be honest, I don't really see measurements at the moment yet. The only measurements I saw that right after the league was stopped for a long time, and then we go back playing without supporters. Now we go back playing again with, I think, 60% capacity. But real measurements, to be honest, I cannot tell you what they really did.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And if they did.
Yeah. So we'll have to see what will be improved in the longer term.
Exactly. Right.
So off the pitch, you are an entrepreneur as well. You market yourself as well. You've been often called like the David Beckham of Southeast Asia, which is a cool nickname to have. So in this phase of your career, you're playing for Persib now. What are the dreams that you still have for yourself as a football player and as an entrepreneur in Southeast Asia, or maybe even beyond?
Nice question. I'm someone who plans and look ahead, and at the same time, I should be someone who really take everything day by day and be happy that with everything I have is actually already such a blessing. But what I have for plans is, now I'm playing at Persib, one of, I think, the biggest club in Indonesia. I still have a dream to play outside Indonesia, especially now with the national team. Things are really going well. I'm playing all the games, have a good track record and statistics. And I'm thinking maybe of a move to Japan or Thailand as a next step in my career, just to challenge myself again and to go and try to play on a new, better level. Also to explore new ways of life, possibilities in Asia. So this is maybe one of the challenges I have for myself.
Yes.
Outside football, as an entrepreneur, I want to be the biggest social football player, marketing-wise, in Southeast Asia. And I'm on the way. I'm not there yet. I still have many steps to go. I think I'm on the right way, but this is the end goal for me, the dream to be marked and to be remembered and to create a legacy in Indonesia where people will always say there was no guy like Mark Klok in terms of football capacity, in his qualities, but also in terms of marketing.
Yes, that's beautiful. I think that's a beautiful way to end the podcast. Final question, do you have a message? I know a lot of Indonesian fans will be checking this this podcast as well. Do you have a message for them?
Yes, just to say thank you so much for the support always. I really, really, really got touched by it every single time and keep doing it, keep supporting Indonesian football in general, and keep looking out for 433 because 433 is coming to Indonesia soon.
Yes.
So we're going to have some exclusive content as well there.
Good stuff. That's right. All right, Mark. I hope you get well soon from your fever. It was a pleasure to talk to you, man. And I hope you get to achieve the goals you mentioned in your career. Thank you, man.
Thanks, man.
That's the amazing story of Mark Plok. Let's hope he'll achieve his goal in cementing his legacy as one of the biggest names ever in Southeast Asian football. My name is Sam van Raalte, and thank you for listening to this episode of the 433 Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.